Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. We are heading into the penultimate weekend of the Premier League season. It's hard to believe. It's gone. Next weekend is the final weekend of the Premier League. And you're going, whoa. That's just occurred to me now, by the way, just as I was saying it out loud. It's like, what? How? Just a few minutes ago, we were going, where are all the players that we're supposed to buy? How are we going to play Liverpool without any centre-halves? We don't have any Koscielny's. Chambers and Holding? Come on, that's not going to work, Arsene Wenger. And now, here we are in May. We've got a round of games this weekend. We've got Everton next weekend. Also, we've got Sunderland, of course, in midweek because we're doing some fixture catch-up. But that's it. That is it for another season. And it's like, am I getting older? Is it because I'm getting older that things are going by so much more quickly? Or has this season just flown by with all the excitement and good times and fun that we've had? That must be it. It is hard to believe, though, that it's done. It's gone. It's done and dusted. And we're heading into a summer where what the fuck is this summer going to be like? When you stop and think about that, what is the summer going to be like? Who's going to be manager? Who's going to be at the club? Which players are going to be here? Turn your phone off before you start recording, you unprofessional asshole. Who's going to be the chief executive? Is anybody going to be left? Will they all be gone? Who's going to be making any decisions about who's going to buy the players? Don't worry, Dick Law is going to be around for a while yet, so everything should be okay. Dick Law, he is the glue that's holding it all together. You see, look, he's even got his own theme tune. Anyway, look, we are heading into the penultimate round of fixtures in the Premier League. We still have Sunderland as well, but we're still in there. There's still a chance. It's out of our hands, of course, but there is still a chance for us to finish in the top four. And this time last week, I am not sure that I was that confident that we could still be in here because we had to face Manchester United on Sunday. Arsene Wenger's record against Jose Mourinho, of course, was not great. We know that. And then we were going away to Southampton, a ground at which we hadn't won since 2003, even if it did span a period of time in the Premier League when Southampton weren't in it. They were sort of below. They were in the Championship. But here we are. We've come through those two fixtures very well. And I think if you had said to people this time last week, look, guys, you're going to win both those games, going to score a couple of goals in each game, you're not going to concede any goals, and you're going to be right in there. You're putting some pressure on Liverpool, maybe Manchester City. I think I would have said, hey, you guy telling me this, you're nuts. You're not. Look at how we played against Tottenham. It was terrible. They played us off the park, and we just had, you know, we're in a bit of a mess. Everything's a bit of a mess. But look, here we are. We beat Manchester United 2-0. We beat Southampton 2-0 on Wednesday night. Brilliant goal from Alexis Sanchez. Absolutely amazing goal from Alexis. When he does that, you're like, oh, I really love that guy. And then you forget the guy who for the previous 10 minutes had given the ball away constantly and taken a terrible foul throw and just was, nothing was working for him. And then just bang, he sparked into life and scored a fantastic goal. And then we got a second goal a bit later on to seal the deal. Aaron Ramsey heading back an Alexis Sanchez cross over to Olivier Giroud, who'd come off the bench to score for the sixth time this season as a substitute. He is indeed a super sub. And there we are. We've won two games in a row, having conceded 6 points on the board. And if Liverpool drop points against West Ham, if we can go to Stoke and win, whoo, it's all going to get very exciting in the final week. If Liverpool drop points and we beat Stoke, it's in our own hands. We beat Sunderland, we beat Everton, we're in the top four. Blimey. Couldn't happen, could it? I mean, we couldn't, could we? I mean, he couldn't do it again, could he? Whew, we'll see, we'll see. I did like the way Arsene Wenger was not getting ahead of himself at all when he was asked about those chances after the Southampton game. He's like, look, we've got to go to a ground where we haven't won since 2010. We haven't won at Stoke in a long time. It's always a difficult game, and they are always very annoying. They damage us, and we do owe them one, but he wasn't getting ahead of himself after two good wins. You know, there's still work to do. We got to win those games, so we'll chat with our guest a little bit later on about that. But, of course, all the talk this week has been about Arsene Wenger and the director of football thing. He was having a very nice press conference on Tuesday ahead of the Southampton game, and then he was asked, what about the rumours that Arsenal are going to appoint a director of football? What, have you anything to say, anything about that? And he was all,
No, sorry, no.
And then there was the best bit of all, where Arsene Wenger, a man who understands football as well as anybody. Look, you can criticise him for the way his teams play and everything else, but you cannot doubt the fact that he is a hugely, highly intelligent man who's worked in football at the top flight of football for 30 years across Europe. He knows players, he knows managers, directors, owners. He knows football inside out, and he pretended that he didn't know what a director of football was.
Director of football, I don't know what it means. Is it somebody who stands on the road and directs, play right and left? I don't understand. I never could understand what it means, director of football.
Some have said that it's a shot across the bows of Ivan Gazidis, who wants a director of football. Other people have suggested that this director of football thing is the brainchild of Josh Kroenke. That's where it's coming from, and that might in some ways be part of Wenger's absolute vehemence against it. Because, look, we know he knows what a director of football is. He was on the Arsenal website back in 2008 before we appointed Ivan Gazidis, talking about how a director of football might work at an English club once the roles were clearly defined. And I think that's what the thing is with Arsene Wenger, is that the idea that if he is going to stay on, there's somebody else who could say, look, we're going to buy this player, whether you like him or not. We're going to put him in your squad, whether you want him or not. I think most managers would be opposed to that kind of a thing, unless they were at a club where that structure was absolutely set in stone and had a track record of working. But, you know, the idea of Arsene Wenger going, what is a director of football? Like, someone who directs footballers left and right. I mean, what is a bus conductor? Is it a bus who conducts an orchestra and tells them when to play the triangle? And the brass section, when does that come in? The bus will conduct the orchestra. What about a fireman? Is that a man who is on fire or a man made of fire? Oh, you're a pilot. You're a pilot, you say. Does that mean you make lots of pies? What is this surgeon? Is it a man called John who has been knighted? The idea that Arsene Wenger would sit in a press conference in front of journalists, in front of all the people watching who know that he knows, and deny completely that he understands what the role of a director of football is absurd. It's absolutely ludicrous. And it just speaks to the absurdity of what's going on at Arsenal right now, where nobody has any idea what's happening or nobody's prepared to give clarity in any way. Was this a shot at the board? Was it a shot at the chief executive? Was it a shot at the owner? Was it a man digging his heels in? I mean, ultimately, when it comes down to it, Arsene Wenger's contract runs out in about 6 weeks at Arsenal. He's not necessarily in a position of power, because the club don't have to fire him. All they have to do is not give him a new contract. So he's not really in a position of power unless, having spoken to Stan Kroenke, for example, he knows that Stan Kroenke is 100% behind him. And that way he can say something like that in a press conference, knowing that it would put him at loggerheads with Josh Kroenke Although, what a wanker Stan would be if he gave Arsene Wenger his full backing, knowing that his son wanted to bring in a director of football, but he was still on Arsene's side. Maybe Josh Kroenke is that annoying that even his own dad doesn't like him. I don't know. I've never met the guy. Maybe he's a very personable guy. I'm just saying. I'm just throwing out these concepts here. But, you know, what? I don't know. Just every week there's something else going on with this football club, and you go, well, it can't get any stranger than this. And then it gets stranger and stranger. So who knows what will happen next week. Arsene Wenger, what is a football? Is it a ball made of feet? I don't know. I never could understand what a football was. A little bit later on, I will give you the winners of the mug competition. A Boilk mug. Actually, I'm gonna give two mugs away because we've had two wins this week, and I think that deserves extra generosity on my part. And just in case, I know it's ludicrous and a ludicrous idea, just in case the mugs are lucky, or the mug competitions are lucky, I'll give you another chance to win this week as well. So stand by for that. I'll give you the question or give you the competition details a bit later on. But now let's chat to our guest, a bit of football podcast crossover from the Football Ramble. It's Jim Campbell. Hello there.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right, thanks. And all the better for seeing Arsenal win two games in a row, 2-0 both times, and with clean sheets, considering the way our defence has been in recent times. There could well be something to the suggestion that moving to three at the back has made an impact from a defensive point of view.
Yeah, it's been great, hasn't it? It's almost like watching Arsenal with stabilisers on. Because it's been a bit wonky, it's been a bit rickety. We've just done something to shore it up that everyone else seems to be doing, and we've not been too embarrassed to do it. And it's been nice to get a look at Rob Holding, hasn't it? Because he's got a lot of protection in there when he's played. But he's done very well in the games that he's featured. But as you say, it's nice to just see Arsenal get two, you wouldn't say routine wins against Man United, but the manner of the performances felt very winnish, very routine. It just feels really good to see them just win, even if it's very functional. And there's a little bit of flow coming back into the games. They had very similar patterns where the first half was absolutely turgid, but then they sort of, you know, stepped it up a bit in the second.
Yeah, there was against United, there were obviously the two goals in quick succession around more or less the same time that we scored against Southampton. This time there was only one goal from Alexis Sanchez, but it was a piece of football that I think you come to associate with Arsenal, or people have associated with Arsenal down the years. You know, we played the ball from deep. The ball came into Sanchez. He held it up, laid it off to Granit Xhaka, who played it to Ozil, back to Sanchez, and then he just performed this piece of skill that really set him apart from pretty much every other player on the pitch, which was in sort of contrast to some of the other stuff he'd done. We might touch on that in a minute, but having that kind of player who can turn a game in a matter of 2 or 3 seconds, it's very often the difference at this level.
Absolutely, and I think it's maybe gone under the radar a little bit about what a significant win this is, because it's been a long time since we won it at Southampton. They've been a real bogey team for us for a bit. Yeah. There wasn't really much about that going into the game, certainly from what I saw. And this is one we've slipped up on so many times. And now to sort of exercise that, I know they're not in the best form generally, Southampton. They're having a bit of a strange old season. But yeah, it was good, and it is important to have a player in there like that. And it reminds me of when Robin van Persie dragged us into the top four, and how crucial it was to have him. Mm-hmm. And Sanchez has been a similar figure this season, despite all the sort of strangeness surrounding his future and stuff. I guess it's comparable, really, in that same way. But yeah, there's been far too few of those moments of magic. That's the problem with Arsenal, isn't it? People, they know how to shut us out. So it depends on moments like that for us to get things out of the game. And there's not been enough this year.
Yeah, I think the Van Persie comparison is interesting. I made the same comparison in a piece I wrote yesterday for another website. But, you know, he was a guy who had that ability to provide a moment of individual brilliance. And in some ways, the team became a little bit too reliant on him. And timing, obviously, circumstances, he wanted to leave. He knew he had a finite amount of time left at the top level. And we were at the point where our finances weren't quite flowing the way that they're flowing right now. So Van Persie was sold and Giroud came in, Podolski came in, Cazorla came in that summer, in some ways financed by the Van Persie money, or the Van Persie money offset the purchases when he went later in that summer. But you do wonder, you know, what if we had made those purchases and kept Robin Van Persie? Because I think there was a shift, wasn't there, towards, okay, look, we've been very reliant on Van Persie. Let's make it a bit more collective. Let's make us less reliant on the goals of one man. I think that is sensible in many ways. But if you can do that, if you can increase the collective contribution, but also keep that one guy who can provide those moments of brilliance, then you give yourself a much better chance of winning the title. Think about all the teams that win the title. They generally have at least one player who is capable of those moments. And down the years, we haven't had that. And we do have that with Alexis Sanchez now, even if he is frustrating in many ways.
Yeah, quite. And it's just difficult. It's an interesting comparison, isn't it? Because, you know, you could look ahead and think, well, actually, this is what we need to do this summer. If we can get our way into the top four and we can keep Sanchez, I think Ozil might stay based on the noises he's making, sort of whatever happens. But Sanchez in particular, it's important to keep. But so much of it depends not just on the top four, but on the future of Arsene Wenger. It's just there are so many question marks hanging over the club. It's a weird feeling to have at the end of the season, isn't it? Where normally, as an Arsenal fan, you look ahead and there's a slight optimism, thinking we might bring some new players in, might have a bit of a clear out. That generally never happens, so you have that sort of that fog over it of thinking it'll probably be the same old, but this time is different. It's so uncertain, and my suspicion is they're waiting to announce that Wenger's going to sign his two-year deal, probably after the season tickets have been renewed, and it will just be the same again. But it's weird, this uncertainty, and I wonder if it's going to affect our transfer business, because we've dallied so much in recent years. We're clearly not on top of our game in that regard as we once were. So I just really hope this isn't going to become a saga that just leaves us playing catch up really early again, because that's been part of the problem. Our summer isn't finished until the season starts, if that makes sense. And it's held us back, and here we are every year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point, because even when we have no real distractions, so to speak, we find it difficult to complete deals in a timely manner, because we were looking for a striker, we were looking for a centre half all throughout last summer. And they did try. I mean, they tried to bring in Jamie Vardy very early, but in the end, they brought in Lucas Perez, who didn't arrive until the very end of August.
Yeah.
And there weren't, I mean, I know the European Championships were on, but still, it's possible to do business. This time around, it's very hard to know what the fuck is going to happen because of the situation with the manager, because of all the stuff that seems to be brewing behind the scenes, talk of whether there's boardroom friction, whether there's communication issues between the manager and the board, which I'm told that there are. This is going on, and we could be in a situation, A, where we get to June and the manager, the decision is made, let's say, not to continue with Arsene Wenger, then Arsenal all of a sudden are scratching around for a manager. That's not a process that is really easy. That takes a bit of time, and I'm not convinced that there is in any way a contingency plan for Wenger leaving. Maybe we have a short list with some names on it, but I don't think it's the right way to transition from a manager to Wenger. Or we could be in a situation where perhaps members of the board who are against Arsene Wenger signing a new deal, but who might be overruled by Stan Kroenke, decide, well, look, it's time for us to go. So you have a boardroom deficit then. You might have a club without a chief executive. Is that going to have an impact on the way that we do business? It's also up in the air. It's just, it's bizarre for a club like Arsenal, who have for many years prided themselves on being well run.
Yeah, it's a mess, isn't it? And I think part of the problem is that if Wenger doesn't want to leave, he's the man who puts the succession in place. So if he doesn't want to leave, he simply doesn't do that. So the board are in a situation where if they decide that they want him to leave, then they're in a position where they're not really football people, are they? They're business people by and large. So replacing Arsene Wenger is firstly difficult because they don't have experience of it, but the man's been at the club for over 20 years. So the way a modern football club works now, Arsene Wenger's job is about six people's job. So you've got to replace that as well. And I think that we wouldn't be hearing this stuff about a director of football if Wenger was planning to leave, because it would be strange. Why would we be hearing about an appointment coming in to maybe ease his workload if there wasn't going to be a workload? So I think that's probably a little clue that this is going to happen. But that unrest is worrying ahead of the new season, because they have got to get their ducks in a row before the transfer window opens and before we figure out what the plan is next season, depending on which European competition we're playing in as well. And as you say, it's, you know, we did pride ourselves on being very well run and sort of doing things, you know, the right way in inverted commas, as people often said about us. And that seems to have just it's been neglected, I think, since Kroenke took over, because you know, for us, you know, we all know we're an investment vehicle for that man. So he just wants, you know, us getting a Champions League place and him being able to take his dividends out of the club being really, really stressful. He just doesn't care about that's the same to him as us winning the league, isn't it? It's like, for him, he's far off, doesn't care. So you know, whatever, game on. That, however stressed out we get, however angry people are on Arsenal fan TV, however many bed sheets get ruined in the game, it doesn't make a difference to him. And this is one of the things I think that's frustrating when you hear sort of punditry from outside of the club. I have this on the Ramble as well, where obviously the rest of the guys don't follow Arsenal as closely. It seems really obvious to everyone else. Well, you need to do X, Y, and Z. You know, you just need to, you know, replace Wenger with someone a bit more forward thinking, or do this, do that. And yeah, that all makes sense from outside. But the board don't care, do they? They don't care at the crucial level where those decisions get authorised.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, it's not apparent that they care, but what we don't know is what they think. We have got no clue whatsoever in as to what they're thinking. You know, Ivan Gazidis, maybe he is absolutely dedicated to, like, a catalyst for change. But that sounds to me like a buzzword, like political sloganeering.
Yeah, strength and stability.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I mean, what, you know, if he came out tomorrow and went, you know, change a doodle do, or yes, we probably can, but we won't. You know, you'd be equally.
We'll be changing into Bayern Munich.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're just going, what on earth is going on? I mean, we don't have any clarity whatsoever from the top of the club. And it is a worry, because it seems that there is some tension there. I mean, I presume you saw Arsene Wenger talking about the director of football thing and being quite clear that he was not going to work, or would not work, in a structure where, and I don't think it's necessarily director of football itself, but I think the idea is that somebody else would come in and decide for him what players the club is going to buy. I think that's his sticking point with it. I don't think necessarily that he is against working with somebody who he trusts, somebody whose judgment he trusts, somebody who can in some ways make his workload a bit easier, and somebody who could perhaps improve things at the football club in terms of recruitment. And that's an area that definitely needs to be recruited. But I do wonder if he feels like this is something that is being foisted on him for expedience sake, because it's going to reflect well on the likes of Gazidis, who to this point have been absolutely dead silent. I looked it up. The last time Ivan Gazidis said anything whatsoever about Arsene Wenger, and even then he didn't say very much, was October 2016. Since then, we've heard nothing from him about the manager's situation, the goings-on at the football club. There's been nothing public other than some back-channel stuff to journalists and that fans forum meeting through which there was, like, secondhand reporting. That's it. We haven't, like, nothing.
Yeah. Well, when your club are doing well, this sort of culture of silence and keeping everything in-house is great, isn't it? Because, it reflects a sort of quiet dignity. But where there's so much uncertainty, it seems to show a sort of disdain for the fans, because it's, you know, Arsenal are an expensive club. You know, people laugh at Arsenal fan TV all the time, right? But one of the guys on there is always making that point that he spent like 70 grand following Arsenal over however long it is that he calculated that time. It's a lot of money for most people. So, that, you know, if they go every week, they're entitled to, you know, to voice their opinions. But with this director of football thing, I wonder if this has happened already with Lucas Perez. Because it looks very much like he's not Wenger's man.
But how does that happen, Jim? Because we know for a fact, I mean, this is one of the criticisms that people make of Arsene Wenger, is that he makes all the decisions. He is the one who gives the green light to any transfer that comes into this club. And you can look at Lucas Perez and say, yeah, maybe he wasn't like his first choice, but ultimately he had to be his choice. The same with someone like Park. He wasn't somebody that he really, really wanted, but in the end, he had to give the green light.
Well, I wonder if he was perhaps kind of strong-armed into it, or there was some sort of compromise, or perhaps if Ancazidis went over his head. It's hard to know, isn't it? Because we know so little of how the club works. But I just, he is like a good Park Chu-young. It's a strange signing, because he's, his performances on the pitch have largely, you know, yielded goals or assists, and you sort of forget he's even there. So I just wonder if this is Wenger making a point, and what we're seeing now is a sort of culmination of this.
Maybe, because I mean, he talked about Lucas Perez in glowing terms. He said he's a really good player, and he said, I feel sorry for him that I haven't been able to give him the games that he deserves. He's actually talking about him giving the games that he deserves. And, you know, you feel like there are games where Perez would have been a really good option, either from the bench a bit earlier or even to start games. So, you know, I suppose it does fuel those conspiracy theories of why would a manager who thinks a player is a good player who deserves to play more and who has contributed in a pretty decent way whenever he has been given a chance, why would you leave him out? Is that cutting off your nose to spite your face, or is it? Are you, like you say, making a point again? You know, it's very difficult to know, isn't it?
Absolutely, and hence the frustration.
We're just taking a very short break in the middle of the interview with Jim, just to build in the bit where there could be an ad. There may be an ad, there may not be an ad, but if there is an ad, it's going to appear right now.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. And if you didn't get an ad, that was about, I don't know, 1.2 seconds worth of silence. That's all. So let's get back to Jim.
So do you feel we're going to get to the top four? Do you think we're going to be able to do it, looking at the games that the other teams have?
I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I was quite adamant on the Arscast Extra that no, there was no way. I think after we lost to Spurs, I think that was it for me. I mean, you look at what we did at Southampton, and we haven't won there since 2003. Now, bearing in mind, Southampton were out of the Premier League from 2004 to 2012. But, our record there has not been great. We went there, and we won. And quite often, those records that people bring up are things that are almost like a millstone around our neck. We're not necessarily able to cope with those pressures. If we can beat Stoke on Saturday, and that is a really difficult place for us to go. The last time we won there was 2010, and that was a 3-1 win, and it was the game when Aaron Ramsey's leg was broken by Ryan Shawcross. That was the last time we won at Stoke City. It has been a ground which has left, I think, scars on the psyche of not just this team, but the football club itself. Yeah. If we can go there and win a game, I wouldn't necessarily be confident, but you look at the next two games we have, we've got Sunderland at home and Everton at home on the final day. Then you go, well, look, anything could happen, but I think so much depends on what happens on Saturday at Stoke. I mean, what do you reckon?
Well, I think, as you say, they have been in good, quite stoic form recently. Stoke will want to beat us, obviously, because it's a grudge match, regardless of how things have maybe cooled a bit in the past few years. So I think the motivation will be really high for Arsenal. In a sense, if we need something to gee us up and inspire us to actually get things over the line and win the next three games on the bounce, there's probably nothing wrong with having a bit of a challenge in the way. That's been our problem too often, isn't it? Shying away from these challenges. They simply have to step up here. And Aaron Ramsey's been very impressive in the last couple of games, isn't it? The thing I like about him is that he's led. You know, he's been vocal, he's been very positive, and he's made things happen. So I do feel we can get a result. It will be tough. And the problem is, as well, it's out of our hands. You've got to look at the fixtures the other teams have. So Man City have got to play Leicester, West Brom and Watford. And they probably want to get some revenge over Leicester, who beat them earlier in the season. And that's the one fixture you'd look at where they might, you know, they might drop some points. And then Liverpool have got West Ham at the London Stadium and Middlesbrough at home. And you'd think, you know, they're certainly capable of winning both of those games. So it's really tough. It's out of our hands. But I think I'm the same as you, really. A couple of weeks ago, I would have said something different. But I think we're in a position to give ourselves the best chance to try and make someone slip up. But we tend to thrive in these situations, don't we? Where there's nothing really major we can win. So the pressure's off and we can just play our natural game.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever our natural game is anymore, but I absolutely take your point there. You know, Liverpool, West Ham, I think that's the one where they might drop points because, you know, West Ham are pesky and annoying to other teams. Not necessarily for us, but they certainly have been for other teams. You see what they did last weekend, rather hilariously, to Tottenham, and absolutely fair play to them, and I will give them all a manly handshake for that. That's the one. So if we can beat Stoke on Saturday and West Ham take some points off Liverpool, then at what point does it become in our own hands? I'm going to have to look at the table here and just see how it looks. If Liverpool drew that game, would that give us enough? Let's see. So Liverpool have got 70 points. We have got 66 points with a game in hand. So win our game in hand and we've got 69 points. And Liverpool have 70 points. If Liverpool then drop any points, then it's in our hands to finish above them. So, wow, come on, West Ham. And
that's the great thing with both Liverpool and City. They drop stupid points. So, you know, you can look at all of those games and think, you know, that they're the favourites in all of them. But that's not how the Premier League goes, is it? So, yeah, I'm whatever the notch below quietly confident is, I'm that.
Very, very quietly confident, silently confident.
Confident, like Stan Kroenke himself.
Yes, the man himself. I suppose there are other things that we need to look at as well when it comes to this summer. And Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is a player whose contract is heading into the final 12 months. I have this suspicion that the reason why so many players' contracts are winding down is because maybe at the start of the campaign, Arsene Wenger thought it would be his final one and was leaving decisions to a new manager. So Wilshere, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Chesney, Gibbs, players like that, obviously Ozil and Sanchez, I think if they could have extended those contracts before now, they absolutely would have. But Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, a guy who's, I won't say blossomed, but certainly enjoying the best spell of his of the season at the moment, playing at right wing back. He's a guy whose decision has to be made about his future. I mean, the manager keeps talking about wanting to keep him, but as far as we know, there's been no offer on the table, and we keep getting these stories which look like they're leaked from the Oxlade-Chamberlain camp.
Yeah.
That Liverpool are interested, for example. Whether it's a way of forcing Arsenal's hand or whether it is something that he's genuinely interested in, we don't know, but it's another sort of area of inaction, isn't it, where we keep talking about how we want to keep him and we don't do anything about it.
I wonder if there is a bit of kind of brinkmanship going on there, because I really like Oxlade-Chamberlain and he's been in good form of late, and he was in quite good form at the start of the season, if I remember properly. But he did drop off a lot. He was one of those people that was a particularly sluggish performer at times, and he's got an absolutely incredible knack of providing a killer through ball to the opposition, which he hasn't necessarily ironed out of his game yet. So I wonder if people look at him, and you know the value put on him is always like 30 million or 35 million, something like that. And I wonder if people are still sort of, you know, projecting potential onto him, because I really like him, as I say, but I feel he maybe should be contributing more for the stage of his career that he's at. So I wonder if the club are looking at that in the same way and just sort of dallying. That seems to have been what defines us, you know, in the past few years, just dallying about things.
Mm. And before we just finish up here, we have to look at the midfield partnership. One of the things that's been an issue all season is how functional our midfield has been. And I think the answer has been not very. But with Aaron Ramsey enjoying a run of games, Granit Xhaka rising above, I think, some of the criticism that's been levelled at him, which has been over the top. You see people making ludicrous comparisons with other players and how Xhaka has been a flop. I don't think he's been a flop at all. I think he's been a reasonably bright spot in a team that hasn't really hasn't clicked as a team. But Ramsey and Xhaka, I always felt like they had the ability to work well together, and we're seeing that. I mean, keeping those two guys fit and working together for the last few games of the season is going to be important.
Absolutely. Slot together very well, don't they? Because I think they complement each other well, because Xhaka isn't the player that he's billed as, is he? I think people expect him to be this kind of ball busting defensive midfielder, and he's not. You know, he's a quite deep lying playmaker with a long range of passing, and it's like saying that Nacho Monreal is a terrible striker and we need to get rid of him. He's he's judged on a set of standards that don't apply to his actual game. So I think too much is made of his tackling being very reckless, because it clearly is. But, you know, he isn't necessarily in there as the enforcer that people think he is. So I think they slot together well, because, you know, Ramsey will carry the ball forward when it's given to him, and Jack is good at distributing it like that. So I think it's that fulcrum works better than any other combination we have. And I think for now, stick to it. But there is clear building work to be done in the summer. We can't have a situation where we only have one set of midfielders that complement each other like that. I mean, missing Santi Cazorla for the whole season has been a massive blow to us, which has been it's gone way under the radar, I think. Something needs to change in that midfield. I don't know who needs to move on or who needs to come in, but it's kind of ridiculous that we have this like wonky set of midfield options.
Yeah, definitely something to be worked on by whoever the manager is, and by whoever the transfer fixer is, and by whoever the chief executive is, and who knows who else.
Most clubs know this, don't they?
They do, yeah.
Know who the people at their club are.
Yeah. Oh, well, look, this is Arsenal. No, we never do things the easy way, do we? In any way. Just before we let you go, Football Ramble are doing a live show at the end of this month, so do give us some details about that if people want to head along.
We certainly are. We're doing the Hackney Empire on the 27th of May, which is the day of the FA Cup final. But don't worry, it starts. It starts in plenty of time for you to see the game and then come along. So if you go to hackneyempire.co.uk or check out at Football Ramble on Twitter or any of our social channels, there'll be links to tickets there. We're going to have some special guests. We're going to do some games, some audience interaction, just probably round up the season, really. And our live shows are a lot of fun. So come along, get your tickets from hackneyempire.co.uk.
All right. Well, listen. Good luck with that. Hopefully you're celebrating on the evening with an FA Cup. And look, we'll catch you again soon, Jim. Thanks a million.
Cheers.
Thank you very much indeed to Jim. Of course, he likes to keep it a bit hush-hush that his brothers Saul and Kevin were big, big stars at Arsenal. But trust me, this is a well-connected guy. You can follow him on Twitter at Jim Campbell TFR. That's at Jim Campbell TFR. And also he's part of the Football Ramble podcast, which I'm sure many of you listen to as well, which is at Football Ramble. Right. Competition time. Last week I asked you just to email me to tell me that you wanted one of our world famous Boilk mugs, and many of you did. Thank you indeed for entering. And our first winner, look, you might laugh. I certainly laughed when I saw it. And you might think, hey, this is a fix. It's not. What I do is I have to like assign each entry a number and then put those into the random number generator. It would be just much easier for me to pick out names which look interesting and funny, but that's not what happened. But Benjamin Beer, you have won yourself a Boilk mug. Well done to you. You've got a surname that I like, my friend. So well done to you, Benjamin Beer. You get yourself a mug. And as I said, I was going to give away two. The second winner is Isabel Rhodes. So well done to Benjamin Beer and Isabel Rhodes. You have both got yourself Boilk mugs. I'll be in touch to get your details and we'll get those mugs out to you. Now, if you'd like to win yourself a Boilk mug, I think we should have a question this week. Last week was a bit too easy, just emailing me and telling me that you want a mug. I think I've got to make you work for it a little bit this week. So, given that we just beat Southampton for the first time, since 2003 in the Premier League. Please tell me who scored the winning goal the last time we beat Southampton in the Premier League. I want to know who scored the goal at St. Mary's to give us a win away from home to Southampton way back in 2003. Please send your entries to competition@arsblog.com. That is competition@arsblog.com, and I will give you the winners on next week's Arscast, which will, of course, be the final weekend of the Premier League season. Holy moly. Holy crap. I have to share something with you right now. I have to share it. I'm sorry. It's in my head. It's been in my head for weeks and weeks. I can't get it out of my head. So my feeling is that if I share it, maybe it will be like, you know, they say a problem shared is a problem halved. And a problem shared with all the listeners of this podcast is a problem thousandth into thousands of people who listen to this. So, do you know the song by Sia called Chandelier? I'm sure many of you do. I'm sure there are those of you out there who have no idea what that song is, but it doesn't matter whether you know it or not. I'm going to play you a little clip of it now because this bit of the song has been stuck in my head with the wrong lyric. The wrong lyric for weeks now. So this is the bit. So what she's singing is, I want to swing from the chandelier, except in my head, it's, I want to squeal on a trampoline. I want to squeal on a trampoline. Yeah, it's in my head, I'm sorry. This is like a bit of a therapy session for me. I sit down here in my office, I've got a beer in front of me, a Sierra Nevada Torpedo, and I need to find some way to get this song out of my head. I've tried all the other earworms I can think of. I've tried that Girls Aloud song. You know the one. You can't mistake my biology. The way that you talk, the way that you walk, it's there in our thought. The magic never left inside of me. The way that we talk, the way that we walk, so easy to call. You can't mistake my biology. The way that we talk. I don't know if this happens to anyone else, but sometimes I get a little bout of insomnia. Very rarely, thankfully, it's not that often, but when it happens, I'm lying there in bed, I'm tossing and turning, trying to get to sleep, but there's a song in my head, and it's usually like two lines of a song, or half the chorus of a song, just repeating. And one night, I was in Galway, and I had to drive back to Dublin the next morning, and I lay there for about 6 hours. With that song going around and around and around in my head. Honestly. But it's been usurped. It's been trumped by this squeal on a trampoline song. I even tried, like, What's the Colour of Money? What's the colour of money? What's the colour of money? Don't tell me that you think it's green. Me, you know it's red. What's the colour of money? What's the colour of money? Don't tell me that you think it's green. Me, you know it's red. So look, by sharing this, by broadcasting this, I'm hoping to rid my mind of this terrible earworm. I'm hoping that by opening up to you, by being as brutally honest and frank as I've ever been on this podcast, it might help me, and I hope you'll indulge me in that. I do obviously appreciate all of you who download this show and take the time to listen to it every week or twice a week even. And I know that there are some of you out there now who are going, fuck you, you absolute wanker. You just put three earworms in my head and I can't get any of them out. And they're like, it's like a mashup earworm. But I'm sorry, I had to. It's just the way it is. I know we should talk about football, shouldn't we? But what can we say? We don't know anything about the team because we played on Wednesday. Hopefully the injury to Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is not going to be too difficult for him to overcome because, well, you know, he's done well in that right wing-back position. And, of course, he must have had his eye on the FA Cup final. Hector Bellerin, the door is open for him again. If Oxlade-Chamberlain is out and he continues to play well, maybe he'll get the nod at Wembley because he's been the guy who's been playing the games. And Oxlade-Chamberlain spoke last month, I think, about not making the 2014 FA Cup final. He was absolutely gutted. He said, in the season when we first won the FA Cup, I played pretty much all the games. I got a little injury before the end of the season, which kept me out for 3 weeks. Sounds familiar. He said, I came back with a week to go and I trained that week. And to cut a long story short, the boss put out the squad for the final and I wasn't in it. To say I was devastated was an understatement. I remember going to him and he said, well, there's a lot of people that are maybe fitter than you at the moment. And I said, yeah, but I need to be in this squad. That's what I kept saying to him. I said, I'm ready. And in the end, he decided to take me, but as the 19th man. I still had a bit of hope that I was going to make the bench, but the day of the game came and he still didn't put me on the bench and I was really devastated that day. Then he said, well, you know, once we won the cup, I was delighted for the club, etc., which is what he's got to say. But he didn't play from the start in the 2015 final either. He came on as a substitute, I think. So he would have been angling for a Wembley start. So for him, it would be a real blow if this injury, this hamstring injury, was going to keep him out. We'll have injury news and team news tomorrow over on Arseblog News. As soon as the manager meets the press, we'll see what else crops up in the press conference tomorrow. We're going to play Stoke away from home. It's going to be difficult. It's always difficult there. We know that they get themselves up for this game. We know that the crowd are up for it as well. They make a lot of noise. They create an atmosphere, which is not something we've always dealt particularly well with. But, you know, it's about time. We're overdue a win there. We owe them. At this point. And look, after the season that we've had and after the run that we've been on, we owe ourselves. Not that we owe ourselves, but you know what I mean? This team owes it to themselves to go there and overcome a little bit of a hurdle like they did in midweek against Southampton, or a ground that we haven't won on for quite some time. So it would be very, very timely to go to Stoke and bury that hoodoo. Then we've got Sunderland next week. We've got Everton on the final day of the season, and let's see what happens to all the others. So look, it's all about the next game. Let's make sure that we win that. And then see what happens. See what the other teams do. See if anybody can help us out and see if we can win the rest of our games and maybe finish in that top four. So look, James and I will be here on Monday. We'll have an Arsecast extra for you with all the weekend events. We'll look ahead to the Sunderland game as well. So until then, have yourselves a fine weekend. I'll catch you on the next one. Cheers. Bye-bye. Welcome back to Holy God FM. There she is herself, Amazing Grace, Grace Jones, and pull up to the bumper. We have an electronic communication. Could be an email, could be a text, could be a WhatsApp, could be a facsimile message. We don't know. This is the world we live in now, where the wonders of technology allow us to communicate. Anyway, he says, Dear Holy God FM, I'm being bedeviled by earworms. Every time I try and go asleep, I've got a song going round in my head, and I can't get it out. What am I to do? Yours, tiredly, a very loyal listener. Well, loyal listener, my heart goes out to you. There's nothing worse than lying there with a song in your head that you can't get rid of. But ultimately, the reason that's happening is because God is punishing you. God is saying, you, my child, have been an awful little bollocks. You've been a rapscallion, a ragamuffin, a blackguard, and probably some kind of ruffian as well. So to punish you, he's putting in your head a song that you can't get out of. The only answer is stop
being such an annoying little bollocks. Now, moving on with the music, this is one that's sure to get you off your feet. It's that fella Jellybean, Jellybean Benitez, featuring Steve Dante. It's like a disco inferno. Oh-ho! The Real Thing on Holy God FM.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.